Tucked away high in the Himalayan mountains between India and China is the remote Buddhist country of Bhutan. The capital, Thimphu, is home to less than 100,000 people. It has no stoplights, imagine that. Bhutan is a tiny country known for measuring its GDP not in economic terms, but in gross national happiness. American-born Linda Leeming has married a well-known Bhutanese artist, and she actually lives in Bhutan, in the capital, Thimphu. She's done that for the last 10 years. She joins us now on Travel with Rick Steves to tell us how she found magic in this world and made a life for herself in Bhutan. Linda, thanks for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
What an adventure. It's one thing to be a tourist in Bhutan, but to actually marry in to that fascinating culture. Can you describe Bhutan just in general terms as we get into this discussion? Describe Bhutan, the country.
Bhutan is the last of, I think, maybe 16 Buddhist monarchies. It's an independent country. It has never been colonized. It's about 200 miles from east to west and 100 miles north to south. In the eastern Himalayas between Chinese Tibet and India. Hmm. And it's a world apart. It's really a remarkable place.
High altitude?
Yes, high altitude. We live about a mile high. One fascinating thing about Bhutan's geography, it's an isolated place mainly because of its geography. It's mountainous all the way around. Mm-hmm. And it's got every climate zone.
And you think surrounded by China and India of massive populations, but Bhutan is fairly sparsely populated.
Yes. The Bhutanese like to say it's the place where nobody else wanted to be. They sort of got pushed up in there. It's protected. And the Tibetans used to invade because Bhutan has a lot of these sheltered valleys where anything will grow. It's high up and it's in the Himalayas, but we have beautiful gardens and lots of flora and fauna.
So just briefly, Linda, is it a democracy or is it a monarchy? Because, it sounds like there's kind of a heavy-handed, top-down approach to how life will be in Bhutan. How does that work?
There is a monarchy, and it's been, I believe, since 1908, the first king. Now we're on the fifth king of Bhutan. Democracy came to Bhutan, though, in 2005. The fourth king, the current king's father, Jigme Singye Wangchuck, stepped down, and he said that the country should become democratic. He saw, I guess, the handwriting on the wall. Mm-hmm. And so I did some research. It's unheard of for a monarch to step down unless, it's the French Revolution or something. So the people didn't want it. They love their king. But he said, you're not always going to have a benevolent king. So
the country is actually representative now.
Yes, it is. There's a parliament and they're voting. One person, one vote. And they've adapted very well.
Now, what distinguishes Bhutan, as I mentioned in the introduction, is that you don't measure how well your society is doing by how much money you're making, but the government, and I guess this goes back to the monarchy, has decided that they're going to measure it in terms of gross national happiness. What does that mean?
Yes. It's the fourth king, Jigme Singye Wangchuck, in the early 1970s when he became king, was doing an interview in India somewhere, and he said for his people he would rather have gross national happiness as opposed to gross national product. I don't know if he had his tongue in his cheek or if, I think he was pretty serious, but it became the development moniker. So gross national happiness means anything the country does, anything done in the government does, has to hit on at least two of four pillars. The four pillars are good governance, equitable economic development, cultural preservation, and environmental preservation. So it's a really good thing. It's made this little country kind of a world apart.
And is it used to abuse people so elites can have their way with people, or is it actually genuinely compassionate and equitable?
I think it's genuinely compassionate and equitable. The government says what it does, and it does what it says. And they really do work for the people. For example, they've just developed a constitution over, maybe a 30-year period, but it was ratified, I guess within the last 10 years. And in the Constitution, they made or part of the Constitution says that the country must remain forest covered, 60% forest covered in perpetuity. So these are the kinds of things that they do. There's free health care and education in Bhutan. And when you talk about happiness, that's a lot of peace of mind when you mm-hmm. go to bed at night and you know that you won't be bankrupt if you have an illness. The government takes care.
Is there a sense that there's no reason to be frantic and in a rat race because everybody's in it together and let's just enjoy the moment? What does it do for the tempo of life?
It's a lot slower in Bhutan. It's, I think, family's still very important. People live usually in extended families, 3-4 generations. There's a lot of clean air. There's a pristine environment. It's an ecological hotspot. So I think the Bhutanese know what they have, mm-hmm. and they really try to keep it.
Linda Leeming's our guest right now on Travel with Rick Steves. She's been tackling cross-cultural differences ever since she started teaching English in Bhutan back in the 1990s. Linda married a prominent Bhutanese artist and is learning to live in the capital of the country that's sometimes called the happiest place on earth, all while unlearning her American-style impatience. Linda's two books about living in Bhutan are called Married to Bhutan, How One Woman Got Lost, Said I Do, and Found Bliss, and A Field Guide to Happiness. Her website includes photos and tips for visiting Bhutan. It's at lindaleeming.com. Now, Linda, you are from Tennessee, and you are married into Bhutan, and you live in the capital city of Thimphu. From your experience, what do you prefer?
When I'm in Nashville, I miss Bhutan, and when I'm in Bhutan, I miss Nashville. So I'm sort of a hybrid. I'm not one or the other anymore, I think.
What do you miss when you're in Bhutan about Nashville, and what do you miss when you're in Nashville about Bhutan?
Oh, I miss the great American plumbing, and I miss grocery stores, and I guess I should say I miss my family mm-hmm. and friends. And when I'm in Bhutan, when I'm in the U.S., I miss the peace of Bhutan and walking everywhere and how quirky it is and just a very individualized little place.
So when we're tourists dreaming of going to Bhutan, we have this government that's very determined to keep it protected from the rat race. What are the mm-hmm. quirks for tourism? What are the limits? How complicated it is? Are you able to just fly in and have a good time, or do you need to set things up in advance?
You definitely need to set things up in advance. It being a very tiny country, the government has taken on a policy of high-dollar, low-impact tourism, which means it being a very fragile place, they just really can't accommodate that many people. And also, there's not that much infrastructure. So there's a day rate that different depending on when in the year you go to Bhutan, off-season or on-season. But the rate goes for your food, your lodging, and you go with a guide and driver. Even the worst of the Bhutanese guides are great. They're very well schooled. They know their country, and they're charming, and they can get you out of any fixes you might be in. They're very handy guys.
So are you taking a tour, or are you going privately and you have your own guide, or is it your option?
Well, several months in advance, you would need to get in touch with a tour agency, either a tour agency in your own country, in the U.S., wherever, or think about a local tour agency in Bhutan. They're very well set up to organize a tour for you. You pay $250 per person per day in high season, that's fall and spring, and you pay $200 per person per day in winter and summer, that's low season. Mm-hmm. But this day rate includes your food, 3 meals a day, water, the services of a guide and driver, all your transportation, and a three-star hotel, three-star government-approved hotel. I strongly urge people to upgrade to 4 or 5-star for at least part of this stay, because most of the people I know come from the U.S. and it's very arduous. It's an arduous journey. It's half a world away. So anyway, I wanted to point out that $70 of that day rate every day goes directly to the government. They pay for infrastructure. So if you visit Bhutan, you're actually helping build schools and roads and hospitals.
Mm-hmm. Now, is there a contemporary challenge of just modernization? I mean, there's a lot of power in social media and push for being more materialistic and more fast-moving. Does the government see that as a threat to their quality of life? And do they think of tourism coming in as almost infecting their culture with other values? Is that a threat to the status quo?
I'm not sure about the... I know that culture is, and preserving the culture is very important. It's a very independent country, and life is good. There's no homeless people there. You know, people are doing very well. So there is I would say the government is very interested to keep that. You know, it's sort of self-limiting because it really is, takes a long time to get to Bhutan.
Mm-hmm.
Coming to the U.S. or going, I went into 5 airports.
This is Travel with Rick Steves. We're talking with Linda Leeming. She writes books about Bhutan. She married a Bhutanese man, and now she's mixing it up from her Tennessee background and her adopted new homeland of Bhutan. It's a country that measures its GDP, not in economic terms, but in gross national happiness, and seems to be pulling it off. And it's possible to go there as a tourist, but you do need to do it through the government and prepay for it and pretty much have everything lined up by the government. And Linda, when somebody is going to visit Bhutan as a tourist, and if you were helping them set up their trip and so on, what would you say the must-see sight experience is? And then how would you complement that with some sort of a Bhutanese just experience that's not related to some historic site, but just being there?
I remember, actually, we can see your TV show in Bhutan. And so I remember more than once you've said, anywhere you go in the world, it's a really good thing if you can meet some locals and talk to them and, you know, become friends.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's a really good thing. The Bhutanese are very friendly, pretty low-key people. They're very interested, especially to meet Americans. Americans have a very good reputation. We usually travel very well, and we're very welcome in Bhutan.
Hmm.
And so...
people speak English?
What I would say, yes, English is the medium of instruction in the schools. So
okay, like India.
If you're, you know, if you're under 50 years old, you're speaking English. Hmm. So meeting people is really good. What I try to do when my American friends or, you know, friends of friends come to Bhutan is I try to slow them down a little bit, get them to sit somewhere and, you know, have some tea with somebody and just, you know, watch the world go by. Depending on what time of year that you go, Gongtae Village and Phobjeka Valley in the center of the country are amazing because the black-necked cranes come and migrate there. And when they come, it's their mating season. So Bumthong Valley is also lovely because of the history and the beautiful temples. When you go to Bhutan hiking and going to visit temples, there's always a payoff in a hike because you can have a picnic and visit a temple. There are many, many temples in Bhutan. And so if you like to shop, Thimphu's a lot of fun for shopping. And every valley has something different.
So, and when you go to Bhutan, generally, would you stay in a comfortable, you know, first world kind of hotel in the capital city of Thimphu? And then you've got your driver guide, and then you could drive into the valleys and into the villages?
Yes, you drive into the villages, and the government-approved 3-star hotels, there's some variation in them, but the tour agent can set you up, and you've got some leeway. The tour agents will always ask you, what do you like to do? Do you like to hike? Do you like to visit museums and all that kind of thing? So you've got a lot of leeway. You can tell the tour company what you want to do, and they'll set it up. I strongly urge people, especially if they're coming from a long way away and they've only got a short time to have their holiday, I strongly urge them to upgrade to a 4 or 5-star hotel for at least part of the stay, mm-hmm. maybe at the end, so you can get some comfort. Sometimes the 3-star hotels are a little rugged mm-hmm. or a little bit...
We'll go for 5 stars, Bhutanese luxury. This is Travel with Rick Steves. We're talking with Linda Leeming. Her book is A Field Guide to Happiness, What I Learned in Bhutan About Living, Loving, and Waking Up. Her other book is Married to Bhutan, talking about her experience of marrying into the culture. Linda, this is so intriguing to me. I'm scheming already on how I could get some time to go to Bhutan. You mentioned...
Oh, good.
Let's just kind of wrap up our discussion. You mentioned people need to slow down and have a cup of tea. Describe just the tea experience. Every country, so many countries have a delightful tea or coffee kind of culture. What does tea in Bhutan mean?
Tea in Bhutan is everything. If you're happy and excited and celebrating, you sit down and have a cup of tea with somebody. You know, if something terrible's happened, you sit down and have a cup of tea and commiserate. I just recently renewed my car insurance, and I went in, was in a little bit of a hurry, and I went in and I paid my money, and then here comes somebody with a tray with a cup of tea for me. So I sat down and had a cup of tea. It's just part of the culture. It's now, I think coffee's coming into fashion, and Bhutanese are traveling and getting educated in the U.S. and Australia and elsewhere. So now we have some very nice cafes that have good coffee. Mm-hmm. But tea is always kind of the staple.
If you're going to go local, go for the tea. Linda Leeming, thanks so much for joining us and giving us a better appreciation of a country that clearly has taken your heart in many ways.
Thank you so much.
You can send us a verbal snapshot from your own travels, near or far, in an original haiku poem. The radio section at ricksteves.com has a link for sending us yours. Perhaps these recent examples from our wandering listeners will get you inspired.
Cam M. Sato of Williston, Vermont, recalls springtime in Japan with this poem. Staring at the sign, wishing I could read kanji, cherry blossoms fall. Meredith Anderson from Seattle wrote this haiku in her travel journal from a trip to Myanmar. Board the shaky train. The next adventure awaits right out the window. Jan Pyler of Eugene, Oregon, went hiking in the Himalaya Mountains with her daughter and friends. She and her party wrote this brief lament in honor of the labor of a type of local livestock, a cross between cattle and yaks, known as jokeo. Carrying bags up a mountainside for trekkers. Later, burn my poop. And Padma Lakshman of Woodinville, Washington, sends us this thought about a trip to China. Great Wall of China. Serpentine in its splendor. A business trip, eh?
Travel with Rick Steves is produced at Rick Steves Europe in Edmonds, Washington, by Tim Tatton, Kazmira Hall, and Donna Bardsley. Andrew Wakeling and Sherry Court upload the shows to our website. Our theme music was written and performed by Jerry Frank. Gretchen Strauch read our listener travel haiku. You can find links to our guests and search the show archives at ricksteves.com/radio. We'll see you next week with more Travel with Rick Steves.